Welcome to Yarns at Yinhu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 337, Life-Changing Loaf. Saturday, October 26th, 2024. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. Each time I record a podcast, I post photographs, show notes, and links to things I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Today's episode features the following segments: Yarn Lover at Large, Ever Expanding Skill Set, The Front Porch, and Off the Shelf. Support for the Yarns at Yinhu podcast comes from Ko-fi supporters, and each quarter I offer up some prizes. I have awarded and sent the quarter three prizes, and in this episode, I'll be telling you about the quarter four prizes. I'll sort of talk about them as I go along, narrating my Rhinebeck weekend, and then just before the off-the-shelf poetry segment, I will recap with some information about the prizes and how you can get into the running. It is a beautiful, clear, dry, sunny, cool, breezy day here near Delaware Water Gap, Pennsylvania. I'm recording from Yinhu Chaiyuan, my home, which is a replica of a Chinese tea house. And we have just had bright, crisp, and beautiful October weather pretty much all month. We are badly in need of rain, but everyone is enjoying the beauty of the leaves and the clear sunny days so much that they aren't really complaining. And I'm pleased that the weather will hold for yet another fiber event that I plan to attend tomorrow, Sunday, October 27th, in Clinton, New Jersey, and that's the NJ Fiber Shed event. It is being held at a new venue, which is the Art Museum, the Hunterdon Art Museum, right in downtown Clinton, overlooking the waterfalls and the historic mill. There's a beautiful little plaza there, and vendors will have their wares set out, and then there are accompanying workshops that take place in the museum itself. All this while the exhibits at the Hunterdon Art Museum are textile heavy. There is a handmade doll exhibit on the first floor gallery, and then on the second floor gallery is this unblocked improvisational quilt exhibit, and I talked about that in a previous episode. It's absolutely incredible, and what I found very engaging is that many of the artists had recorded either audio or video information that you could access with a QR code when you were viewing the exhibition. So I plan to head over there on Sunday morning, tomorrow morning, to check out this event and see some familiar faces and hopefully meet some new folks. One important announcement is that this morning I have sent out emails to all of the Yarns at Yinhu Puzzle Exchange participants with information about their Puzzle Exchange partner's name, mailing address, and email address so that you can correspond with your partner prior to sending out your packages by November 15th. So it's been a fiber intense fall. Last weekend, I can't believe it's been a week already, I traveled to Rhinebeck, New York to meet up with my friends Mary Beth and Tony, and we stayed in Rhinebeck and took in two of the weekend's events. First was a woolen affair. Mary Beth had scored morning tickets for us, and this took place outside of Red Hook, New York, at a beautiful farm. The morning tickets were perfect because we chose to wear warm sweaters and we weren't overheated. It was well organized and easy to shop. And so we really enjoyed ourselves. Tony dropped us off because we wanted to avoid parking situation and allow other folks as much parking as possible. So we walked up the long lane to the farm and we were able to enjoy a really good cider donut and shop at the merch table. Since we had knitted cuffs for the event using the pattern that was supplied, we were able to get 10% off of merchandise. So we took advantage of that. And then we did a bit of shopping. For my own part, I was very interested in taking a look at a lot of yarns that I've heard people talk about, or I've seen are the yarns listed for particular patterns, but I didn't have any experience handling them or seeing them in person. And that included Sonder yarns and also Farmer's Daughter fibers, which I had not seen in person. So I spent a long time really looking at those different offerings, the colorways, the yardage, the weights, the information about the yarn. I didn't purchase very much. I made a purchase of one skein of Sonder Yarn Company's mohair silk in a black color that I plan to incorporate in a future project. I'll talk about in an upcoming episode when I finally get that started. But I was able to take advantage of the time to really look at everything. The displays were set out very carefully, and in the busier booths, like the Sonder Yarn Co. booth, there was extra help in the form of other knitters and podcasters who were explaining the different yarns and helping people pick things out. So some of the lines were quite long, but the organization was good, the day was beautiful, and we thoroughly enjoyed ourselves. One of my objectives as I shopped last weekend was to procure some things that were like sought after items. And so I purchased a skein of Spin Cycle, the Woolen Affair event colorway, which is a lot of pinks and greens. And that will be one of the items included in the prize pack. We were done shopping, done walking around, getting kind of hungry and tired and kind of ready to check into our reserved B&B. So Mary Beth and I gave Tony a call and walked back down the driveway about 11:15 or so. We had a really great time. And like I said, I think that time slot was really perfect for us. So we spent the rest of the afternoon relaxing and catching up. I heard a lot about Mary Beth and Tony's recent trip to see the glaciers in Alaska. We dined out in the evening, and then on Saturday morning, we made our way over to the Dutchess County Fairgrounds for the New York Sheep and Wool Festival. It was cool in the morning, and as I had reported in my previous episode, I knit a sweater and I sewed a skirt, but I didn't really enjoy the way they looked together. And so I pulled this outfit apart and wore it on different days. Friday, my rib wave was great for the morning. On Saturday, I paired the asymmetrical wool skirt with a make from earlier in the year. I had used Patricia's Tidal Yarns in a lavender and a bright yellow green to knit a colorwork sweater. For that, the base pattern was the Darta sweater from Neons and Neutrals. And then I purchased a cowl pattern called Pusteblumen, which translates dandelion. And I used that for the colorwork that circles the body of the sweater. I heavily modified the cowl pattern to work with the stitch count that I had, but it is a beautiful sweater, and I was delighted, kind of surprised and delighted that it worked so well with this skirt that I had made. So I was very happy to wear that, and especially to be wearing that sweater when Mary Beth and I visited the Tidal Yarns booth to visit Patricia and also my dear friend Sarah, FiberTrek Sarah, who had joined Patricia to help out in her booth. And Sarah is the rock star of helping people shop for Patricia's yarn. And she, over the course of the weekend, she really helped to acclimate people who might be unfamiliar with this kind of yarn and what it could do and all the beauties of Patricia's very carefully designed patterns that go with this yarn. And it was just really fun to see people shopping and to visit the booth. I left with 4 skeins of naturally colored yarn in the fingering weight and a very specific plan for what I would do with that yarn, which I will talk about in an upcoming segment here on this podcast. What I like about Tidal Yarns in terms of knitting with this yarn is that it has really exceptional springiness. It's lively in the hands as you're knitting with it. Patricia uses natural dye materials, and so when they are applied to this like toothsome springy yarn that is often heathered, she's not applying these dyes to a bleached or a pure white product, and you get this wonderful kind of like heathering and moodiness to the colors. It creates really exceptional solid color things if you're just going to knit in one color, but then it also has some additional depth and interest if you happen to be doing color work with it. And she sells it in a fingering as well as a worsted weight. So it's really beautiful and special. I am indebted to Sarah for introducing me to this yarn and to our friend Emily for, you know, additionally kind of cheering me along to start working with this yarn. And it's really, you know, a wonderful indulgence and creates some beautiful things. So I was proud to wear that sweater on Saturday. It's kind of 3/4 sleeves and a lighter weight yarn. So it worked pretty well for the warmth of the day as things got brighter, sunnier, and a little more intense on the fairgrounds. Rhinebeck on Saturday is, you know, bustling and energetic. I mostly stayed outdoors for the day and was very careful with my exposure when I went into the crowded barns. Since I was focused on staying outside as much as possible, I didn't take in a lot of the vendors who were in smaller, more cramped spaces, but I made an exception for Brown Bunny Pottery because I wanted to obtain another item for the 3/4 prize pack. By the time I was able to visit Brown Bunny Pottery, the selection was really picked over. But I was able to select a small cup or bowl. I think it's more like a cup than a bowl. That is in black and white with a really beautiful crow design on the face of it. I like this because I think it has a lot of versatility in use. You could use it as a tea or a coffee cup. It doesn't have a handle, so it's something you can cradle in your hands. You could also put some snacks in it and set it next to you as you're working on a project. It would be great to hold stitch markers or some scissors and tools that you wanted to have nearby while you're working on a project. And Brown Bunny Pottery is one of the most coveted items at the festival, so I felt like that would be a really good choice for this prize pack. That was the longest line that we stood on, and it was really cool because it snaked, you know, outside around the back of the building. And we were able to just stand in line and look at sweaters and outfits as people were exiting the back of that barn. This year, I think I was at my best ever in terms of asking for photographs and selfies and posting things on my Instagram page. So I was pretty much able to capture photographs of everyone that I knew and saw, and even some people that I didn't, and I admired what they were wearing. And I put them together in some reels that are available on Instagram. That is the best of Rhinebeck, is to interact with other knitters and see folks you haven't seen in a while, to do a quick catch up or see what people are shopping for. And really, you know, the elation of being among people who have many of the same values as you do, it's palpable, and the fairgrounds are kind of pulsing with it. On Sunday, we returned to the festival. I was able to stay until about noon. Again, we really kind of concentrated on staying outside and took in the goat parade and the llama parade, and spent quite a bit of time at the fiber shed area where several regional fiber shed organizations had tables and interactive opportunities set up. It's a beautiful grove where they are. It's the way I like to close my time at a festival, if I can, is to spend time interacting with those folks who are thinking so carefully about fiber production, waste, conservation efforts, and really building community in their regions. The weather for the Rhinebeck weekend was uniformly cool in the morning with rising temperatures all day long. On Sunday, I wore my Orbital jumper. That is my most recent finished object. It's a design by Ranti Ehemola, and I knit it using Viking Fiber Company's Aran weight yarn in combination with mohair silk. This is a bold sweater in very big, broad stripes of color with beautiful puffed sleeves, but the whole element of the mohair silk lace weight keeps it from being an overwhelming or a hot sweater, and paired with a sleeveless jumpsuit, it was absolutely perfect for the weather. I also wore many times, despite having brought boots and other, you know, more fall-like footwear, I was wearing my Briar Chunk clogs, and they also got a lot of attention. This is a company that I have been making purchases from for several years now. I really admire their workmanship and their product and their company model. It's an all-female company from California in the United States. The clogs are made of wood and leather primarily. They have super simple designs. They're not for everyone. First of all, they don't have half sizes. And if you need prosthetics or other things, inserts in your shoes, you know, they may not be the shoes for you because they don't have an insole or anything like that. For my feet, they are perfect. I can wear them all day long. They're super stylish. I like them. And I like that they can be repaired by a cobbler and they will last for a very long time. I have purchased exactly one pair of these shoes at full price and had them custom made. That was my first pair. Every subsequent pair I have purchased using Rebriar, which is a resell site specifically for Briar shoes. So it's meant to, you know, extend the chain of use and keep shoes from falling out of use. On the Rebriar website, you can get shoes for as little as $50. And I have recently resold three pairs of shoes that I wasn't wearing anymore. My lifestyle has changed a little bit, and these were shoes I used for the workplace that I wanted to move on to other people. And I've sold all three pairs. I could have accepted a cash payment for them, but I chose to keep my funds available so that I can make a purchase and get a significant discount on a new pair of shoes in the future. Lots of people ask me about these shoes, and I really can't speak highly enough about them, as well as the Rebriar site, which I encourage you, if you're curious but you're worried that the shoes won't fit you, I suggest buying a pair on the Rebriar site. First of all, they're at a significant discount. Second of all, if they don't fit or you don't like them, you can turn right around and sell them again because the shoes retain a lot of their value and people are interested in buying them. I will post links to both Briar and Rebriar in the notes for this podcast episode on my website. Tony and Mary Beth and I purchased apples. I love just sitting and eating an apple and watching the sweaters go by. That's another of my favorite activities at Rhinebeck. And so we just sat and kind of talked over our weekend and soaked in the sun and couldn't believe that things had gone so quickly with our time there and our time together. But it was super precious, and I feel so grateful to have the good health to be able to experience Rhinebeck and to be able to, you know, stay on my feet as much as I did and to have all of that interaction. It's just really kind of fills my bucket in a very, very important way. And I'm grateful for that and to all the people who saw me and wished me well. I thank you. The front porch. After about a week of no knitting at all, I was so busy with tasks the week leading up to Rhinebeck and so tired from all of the overstimulation at the festival that I did not knit one stitch the entire time I was there. I also did a really big sewing project just before departing for Rhinebeck, which was to sew shades for the second story of the investment property that we purchased in Delaware Water Gap. So this is above the Orange Coffee Shop. There is a very deep, very beautiful porch, and Samuel and I had decided that it really needed some kind of shades or awning. Number one, to fill up the space and kind of give the front of the building a little more presence. And number two, because Delaware Water Gap does not have tree-lined streets right in that area, and there is just blistering sun beating down on that porch and then the windows behind all summer long, and it could really use a bit of a shade to protect it and to combat some of that heat and sunlight. And so this is my most ambitious sewing project to date. I obtained fabric after doing measurements. I mapped out the project and what I would be doing. Thankfully, I had the cafe floor and a very well-lit space to set up my sewing machine and do all of that figuring and pinning and sewing. And then on Thursday, before I left for upstate New York, Samuel and I did the install. And with one exception of one of the shades being just over an inch off, I really nailed it with all of the measurements and was able to accommodate the needs of the space and also the fabric that we had obtained. So I left feeling really, really proud of that, but also just kind of like crafted out and took a bit of a break. When I returned, I was super eager to get started on a test knit that I'm signed up for. This is for the Mesa Collared Shawl, designed by Laura Bellows of Jewel Designs. Jewel Designs are the beautiful jewelry quality fastenings and that are really innovative in terms of fasteners for knits, hand knits like shawls and sweaters and things like that. They're easily removed and adjustable, and they look like handsomely made fashion jewelry for your knitwear. I admire Laura. I really enjoy her products, and I like the way she creates these very simple but incredibly versatile knit designs that really showcase the beauty of the knitwear jewelry she makes. And I had seen her and visited her booth at the New Jersey, or the Garden State Sheep and Wool Festival. That was early in September. And she was wearing a piece that I admired a lot. And she said she was working on a new collection. So I signed up to do some test knitting for this collection. The first piece she's working on is this Mesa collared shawl. And that is what I am knitting with Patricia's beautiful naturally colored tidal yarn in fingering weight. I opted for the customized version of the instructions. So she has patterns created on like two scales for like a more petite scale and then a more full figured scale. But then she also has a customizable set of directions where you take measurements on your own body, you do a swatch, and then you convert the stitch count to know your cast on and how much you're knitting and all of that. So that's what she advised me to do. She wanted some feedback on that, and that's what I did do. Mary Beth helped me take the measurements and sort of look at the pictures of the finished item and discuss what would work well on me. And then I have since, returning home, done a swatch, and I've cast on, and I'm knitting like the wind. I've almost knit the first skein completely, and I'm about to kind of jump to a new item in the shawl design and test that out. The yarn, of course, is knitting up beautifully, and this pattern is, it's like a simple elegance. So it's completely in garter stitch. Lots and lots of back and forth knitting, super rhythmic, super easy, easy to make a lot of progress, but then, you know, the overall effect is greater than the sum of its parts. So I hope to finish this test knit, the Mesa collared shawl, in very early November, which means a lot of continued knitting over the next several days. And I certainly will be telling you about it as I complete it and giving you the information about how you can obtain this pattern if you're interested. Ever-expanding skill set. I continue to cook from the Six Seasons, A New Way with Vegetables recipe collection. And this weekend, I'm going to be trying one of the roasted carrots with pistachios and apricots recipes, as well as giving another try to the flatbreads recipe that's included. So I'm excited about that. I'm considering trying the carrot pie recipe. I've always enjoyed pumpkin pie. I've made something similar with butternut squash. But there's a recipe in there that calls for using cooked carrots for the pie. And then there's also an almond crust, which I'm interested in trying. In the meantime, I have finally taken the plunge and I've started making a recipe that I've known about for 10 years. And I've thought about it and I've read about it and I've watched the video. And I just never took the leap because it just seemed like procuring all of the ingredients and the equipment to create it was like a little much given all the other things I was responsible for at the time. But recently, the scope of my responsibilities has shifted a little bit. And I'm trying to take on some of these things that I've been thinking about for a long time. One is the My New Roots life-changing loaf of bread that's featured on the Food 52 Genius Recipes collection. I was interested when I first saw it 10 years ago. This is a grain-forward loaf. There is no flour. But it does take quite a few different kinds of seeds and grains and nuts, as well as psyllium husk, which seems quite essential to hold all of the thing together. And then it's recommended that you use a silicone bread pan. And quite a few of these things I didn't have, and it just seemed like a big mental hurdle to get them. But I have purchased them. And I have made 3 loaves of this life-changing loaf of bread so far. And I am very pleased. It is just what I need now in terms of a delivery of a lot of protein and a lot of fiber. And this bread, it's kind of like there are some packaged supermarket breads in very thin slices. They're often from German companies, or they look like they are from German companies. It's kind of like that sort of a bread. When you slice it, you see a cross-section of all of these grains and seeds. And to make it, you combine the ingredients in a silicone bread pan, which is really cool because you don't need like extra bowls or equipment. You can do all of the stirring right in the pan. And then you let that mixture sit for at least 2 hours, or you could go several hours, or you could even go overnight, which is what I did with my most recent loaf. Then you bake the bread for the first 20 minutes in the pan in the oven. And then you turn it out of the pan to bake the rest of the way in the oven. I have been a little bit skittish about just turning this thing out right on the rack, so I just use a scrap of parchment paper to kind of as like extra insurance for this loaf of bread, and then it finishes cooking and it slices very nicely. So I've sliced the whole loaf and I put it in the freezer, and then I just remove slices to toast and eat as I need them. It's good straight up. It's great with some very thinly sliced cheese or some butter or like a cream cheese spread. It's just super delicious and nourishing. It's really helping me get the extra protein and fiber that I need right now in my diet. And I've also, since I felt successful with my initial loaves, I have started experimenting a little bit with putting some chopped dried fruits into this mix. So I tried some chopped dates, and coming up, I might include some sour cherries, some raisins, or maybe even figs around the holidays. There's quite a bit of versatility in the recipe once you get the hang of it and you can feel like how your ingredients work with like the atmosphere in your home, like the atmospheric conditions and your oven conditions, that sort of thing. As you can see, I'm pretty excited about it and I highly recommend it. It's My New Roots life-changing loaf of bread, and I found the recipe on the Food 52 collection of Genius Recipes. I'm not sure if it's included in the books. I know that Kristen McLaura has put out some books with Genius Recipes, and it's likely that it's also in at least one of those books, but I don't own them. I just source my Food 52 recipes from the website. As I've been making loaf after loaf of this life-changing bread, I've been refamiliarizing myself with the contents of my pantry. I've been looking in there for seeds and nuts. I've been organizing items and restocking some things. And so it was with great delight that I received a package from Kate of the Moon and Furrow that included her beautiful 2025 calendar that has a pantry theme. This is just a gorgeous, gorgeous calendar. It's illustrated by Kate, and each month features interior of a pantry with shelves and items that are suited to that particular season. There are some recipes. There are also books, like from your bookshelf kind of books, that might be interesting to read or reread during that month. It's kind of a celebration of both stocking the pantry and then also using things from your pantry, and it's visually colorful and delightful. Something that really delighted and surprised me a great deal is that the cover art for this calendar features an illustrated version of Reliquary, which is one of my very early patterns for kind of an amulet or a medicine pouch in knitted form. Kate has knitted this item, and then she included her illustration of it in the calendar. That was such a surprise and just really heartwarming and wonderful. So I'm very much looking forward to using this calendar in my home. And Kate was so kind as to send along an additional calendar, which will become the second Q4 Ko-fi prize. So let me tell you about both prizes and then how to get in the drawing for these. So the first Q4 prize will be this calendar, 2025 calendar, designed by Kate of the Moon and Furrow. I will put links into the show notes so you can see these items. And then the additional prize will be a Rhinebeck prize pack. So that includes the spin cycle yarn that I told you about, the brown bunny pottery piece with the crow motif, as well as some other assorted goodies. So I put my program in there. There's also a little project bag from Clean Fleece of New York. There's some information from Hudson Valley Textile Project. There's a Rhinebeck 2024 sticker, which features the really cool artwork design for this year. And there's some free patterns on postcards. Mary Beth also threw in a few of the goodies that she obtained when she was purchasing yarn. So there's some snips and things like that. Like I said, I'll include a photograph so you can see everything that is included in this prize pack. And in order to be in the drawing, all you need to do is to become a one-time contributor or a monthly contributor before my drawing date of December 21st or something like that. And I will be drawing for those prizes, then announcing the winners, and then quickly shipping those prizes out to you, especially the calendar, which I want you to receive before the new year. I am so thankful for all of the folks who support this podcast with Ko-fi contributions. These contributions have allowed me to be as generous as I am with these Rhinebeck purchases as a prize. It's kind of my way of giving back. And I also like the notes that you share and information that you give me about what you like about the podcast, how long you've been listening, and how you use some of the information. It is so meaningful. It's one thing to have an idea for a podcast and to record some episodes, but it's another thing entirely to put that out there into the world and then to know that people are listening and they're acting on information they receive and they're really engaging with it. So thank you so much. One comment that I receive all of the time about the podcast is how much people enjoy the off-the-shelf segment and the poetry that I read. And I love it too. And I found a beautiful poem that I want to share with you. It's new to me. It's by a poet I have never heard of before. And I found it on the Poetry Foundation website. This appeared in the September 2003 publication of Poetry Magazine, and it's by Jacqueline Malone. It's titled Summer's Last Tomatoes. It's kind of my tribute to the way summer around here has seemed to persist with warm and lovely days and even continued blooms in some gardens. Summer's Last Tomatoes. The morning paper lists how many minutes the sunlight lasts. Fact without a hint of the 3 minutes lost since yesterday. In late September, even those who do not track the time as I do can be startled by the rapid, sure decline of days growing hooded on both ends. Mares' tails float across the sky, and like a round cloud, the pale moon rides with them. Nothing is so urgent as to sit in the first fall chill with my back full to the sun. I've brought summer's last tomatoes to the garden bench. The rose in its second year seems eager to prove its worth and turns the trellis pink. The veronicas, though past their prime, offer their topmost spikes to bees, and slowly, indulgently, I slice the fruit, defiantly red on the white plate, as one departing instant becomes the next. Summer's Last Tomatoes. The morning paper lists how many minutes the sunlight lasts. Fact without a hint of the 3 minutes lost since yesterday. In late September, even those who do not track the time as I do can be startled by the rapid, sure decline of days growing hooded at both ends. Mares' tails float across the sky, and like a round cloud, the pale moon rides with them. Nothing is so urgent as to sit in the first fall chill with my back full to the sun. I've brought summer's last tomatoes to the garden bench. The rose in its second year seems eager to prove its worth and turns the trellis pink. The veronicas, though past their prime, offer their topmost spikes to bees, and slowly, indulgently, I slice the fruit, defiantly red on the white plate, as one departing instant becomes the next. Thanks so much for listening. I wish you a wonderful, wonderful week that includes time for the crafting you enjoy. Take care.